Nick Schinkel, the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, reviews Truth, The Day the Soldier Stopped Fighting by Jim Murphy. Schinkel begins his review with a quote from a letter.
What would happen, I wonder, if the armies suddenly and simultaneously went on strike and said some other method must be found of settling the dispute? Winston Churchill to his wife Clementine, November 23, 1914. On Christmas morning, the men awoke to something strange. Absolute quiet. When they glanced over the parapets, they discovered a silent world covered by a thick, clinging fog. English Lieutenant Edward Hulse noted that, quote, the silence seemed extraordinary after the usual din. From all sides, birds seemed to arrive, and we hardly ever see a bird generally. Later in the day, I fed about 50 sparrows outside my dugout, which shows you how complete the silence and quiet was, end quote. An English sergeant, Alfred Self, was a bit unnerved by the lack of familiar battle noise. Quote, it was so quiet, it was uncanny, he wrote in his diary. There were no planes overhead, no observation balloons, no bombs, no rifle fire, therefore no snipers, just an occasional lark, end quote. Some men looked out on this strange scene and wondered if they had entered a dream world. Others prayed that the peaceful atmosphere would continue. As the fog began to lift, soldiers became aware of movement along the enemy trenches. The date's important. That was Christmas Day, 1914, on what we now know as the Western Front in France and Belgium. We remember this special Christmas event of peace on Earth in the midst of World War I in 1914, with a smile and a fond nod of our head from time to time, and then we move on with our lives. Yet, as author Jim Murphy states, this incredible event, which happened at Christmas time in December 1914, could have ended one of the worst wars of the 20th century. It was called the War to End All Wars, and a war that would be over in a matter of months, they were told at the beginning. It was the culmination of decades of distrust and military maneuvering, and the result of what are now seen as foolish choices on the part of political and military leaders, and the surprisingly war-hungry public that supported them. There had been no continent-wide war in Europe since 1815, nearly 100 years. It was a war that was fought using 19th-century military tactics, but 20th-century weapons. A war which took its toll most of all on the men on the front lines of the battles. But most of all, by the late fall of 1914, it was a war that had already lasted for over 4 months. And in that short amount of time, it had already caused despair and dread among the young men who found themselves on the front lines of both sides of the war. All along the Western Front, the soldiers on both sides found themselves in a world that had been completely destroyed by machine gun and artillery fire. A British major, Valentine Fleming, described the scene around him to his friend, Winston Churchill. Begin quote. Imagine a broad belt, 10 miles or so in width, which is positively littered with the bodies of men, in which farms, villages, and cottages are shapeless heaps of blackened masonry, in which fields, roads, and trees are pitted and torn and twisted by shells and disfigured by dead horses, cattle, sheep, and goats, end quote. In this nightmare landscape, the soldiers were forced to live in narrow, zigzagging dirt enclosures, 4 feet wide and 6 or 7 feet deep. The walls often collapsed, especially after bomb explosions shook the earth loose. During the summer, the sun could make the tight spaces as hot as an oven, while in winter, a cold, damp wind would freeze fingers and toes. But by the fall of 1914, it was the series of fierce downpours that made everything a wet, muddy mess. Soldiers, Fleming went on to explain, crouched in the trenches, quote, coated with mud, unshaven, hollow-eyed, with continual strain, unable to reply to the everlasting rain of shells hurled at them from 3, 4, 5, or more miles away, end quote. So it was that World War I introduced trench warfare to the modern world. a form of war that was bloody and filthy, but also a form of warfare that allowed for a strange sort of wartime fraternization between enemies, as the trenches were often dug in so close to each other. They could hear, as Murphy writes, the soldiers could hear the enemy in their trenches. Bits of conversation and bursts of laughter drifted across no man's land. The sound of a musical instrument and singing might be heard. Lieutenant Colonel Lawrence Fisher Rowe reported that his friend, quote, Jimmy went out one night and says he could hear the Huns sloshing about in their trenches and coughing as much as we do, so I expect they are equally uncomfortable, end quote. Another British soldier, Rifleman Leslie Walkington, volunteered that sometimes he and his friends chatted with the enemy. Quote, we used to shout remarks at each other, sometimes rude ones, but generally with less venom than a couple of London cab drivers after a mild collision, end quote. Occasionally, the shouting matches even turned into friendly musical serenades. A young British private had fond memories of those in which he took part. Quote, on a quiet night, we used to sing to each other, sometimes alternate verses of the same tune. They often sang their own words to the tune of God Save the King. In some of the areas of the front lines, more than just songs were shared. Quote, we were so close, 17-year-old Albert Morden noted in a letter to his parents in London. We threw tins of bully beef over to them, or jam or biscuits, and they threw things back. It wasn't done regularly, just an occasional sort of thing. End quote. And then came that magical Christmas season of 1914. As Murphy continues, the soldiers were ready for Christmas and a break from random death. The packages from home were opened eagerly, and puddings and sausages, pipes and tobacco, and other small gifts were shared with comrades. In addition to their holiday parcels, German soldiers received thousands of small pine trees decorated with candles. As the spirit of the approaching holiday took hold, both sides began to sing Christmas carols during their nightly serenades. Gradually, the tension and anger of the soldiers gave way to more peaceful thoughts. German Karl Aldag wrote to his parents, quote, we were relieved on the evening of the 23rd about 10 o'clock. The English had been singing hymns, including some by a fine quartet. On our side, too, the beautiful old songs resounded, with only now and then a shot in between. End quote. Since the beginning of the war, Murphy continues, the weather had been unusually warm and wet. But on December 24, 1914, the temperature dropped suddenly and a light snow fell. This certainly gave the area around the trenches more of the look and feel of Christmas. But more important, the muddy ground began to freeze solid. For the first time in months, the men could move about in the trenches with relative ease. As the sun began to set on Christmas Eve, the British High Command tried once again to keep the men on alert, hoping to discourage fraternization. A message was sent out to all units along the Western Front saying, it is thought possible that the enemy may be contemplating an attack during Xmas or New Year. Special vigilance will be maintained during this period. The German High Command also wanted its soldiers on alert and ready to fight. Just before moving into the trenches that night, Private Hugo Klemm and his comrades were issued a warning. Our company commander emphasized that for that day and the following days, special alertness would be required, as it was expected that the English would perhaps take advantage of our good mood at Christmas by mounting a raid. That night, all along the Western Front, the German soldiers entered their trenches carrying their weapons, as well as some items their commanders would have frowned upon had they known. A young German lieutenant recalled that, quote, at darkness we marched forward, like Father Christmas with parcels hanging from us. All was quiet. No shooting, little snow. We posted a tiny Christmas tree in our dugout, and we placed a second lighted tree on the breastwork. Across the way, British Private Albert Morin glanced over the parapet of his trench toward the German lines and wrote, it was a beautiful moonlit night, frost on the ground, white almost everywhere, and about 7 or 8 in the evening, there was a lot of commotion in the German trenches, and there were these lights. I don't know what they were, and then the Germans sang Silent Night. It was Christmas morning. In one area of the battle line, German soldiers noted that a wooden board was being held up by British soldiers with the words Merry Christmas written on it. Several miles away, another board appeared on the German side that read, You know fight, we know fight. A junior officer remembered that when the fog cleared, he saw a number of German soldiers doing exercises. Quote, they waved, he wrote, and our men waved back. After all, it was Christmas Day. A few minutes passed without anyone firing a shot, and then suddenly, quote, the Germans opposite us and our men were meeting in no man's land, end quote. There had been no official declaration of a universal truce. In fact, commanders had gone out of their way to forbid any stopping of the fighting. And yet more such truces, hundreds of them, were arranged that Christmas morning all along the Western Front. Some truces were arranged by posting a sign suggesting a ceasefire. Others came about through shouted negotiations between lines or simply because soldiers wandered into no man's land and weren't shot. There was a realization on both sides that something truly extraordinary had taken place. A German soldier wrote home that, quote, it was a Christmas celebration in keeping with the command, peace on earth, and a memory which will stay with us always, end quote. His view was echoed by a British soldier who wrote, quote, this experience has been the most practical demonstration I have seen of peace on earth and goodwill towards men, end quote. British Sergeant Alfred Lovell returned to his dugout to record his thoughts and wrote, even as I write, I can scarcely credit what I have seen and done. This has indeed been a wonderful day. There are lessons here in the book Truce that transcend time, lessons that speak to the human spirit. We read here a true story of the indomitable optimism of human nature, the resilience of the human spirit, and the power of a popular mass movement to change history, if only for a day or two. How marvelous it is, then, that we have a recently published book that brings this story to life with contemporary photos and artwork, and most movingly, as you have heard, the excerpts from the soldiers' letters and diaries that truly let these young men speak for themselves, as another reviewer has noted. I should perhaps note that the truce of Christmas did not last long after Christmas Day had ended. There were, we are told, occasional efforts to arrange truces around New Year's Eve and New Year's Day in 1914, but more or less, World War I resumed and trudged on for another 4 years, bringing in, of course, nations and continents far, far away from Europe. As we know, late December and early January are times of special celebrations by many religions and many cultures. Perhaps this special story of a peace made between combatants by the combatants themselves will have a special savor in our day, nearly 100 years after this event occurred. Let's conclude with author Jim Murphy as he writes, it is always risky to compare one war to another. The issues, cultures, and personalities are usually quite different, and some wars are justified, such as the Second World War against Hitler and his allies, while others are not. But there is no reason why lessons can't be drawn from history. World War I might very well have happened anyway, but it is fair to ask how the world would have been different if the sides involved had been more willing to sit down and negotiate their differences. At the very least, the Christmas truce of World War I demonstrated that the combatants were more alike than not. It may have been a small step toward peace on earth, a tiny bit of light in a vast and threatening darkness, but it offered reassurance and hope that a kinder, humane spirit could prevail amid the horrible brutality of war. If truce sounds intriguing and well worth reading, it is. I'm pleased to let you know that there is not just Truce that you can read on this topic, but another as well, one called Silent Night, written by author Stanley Weintraub, a more in-depth and longer book on this same topic. Whichever one you choose, and I hope you choose to read one of these fascinating books, be it Truce by Jim Murphy or Silent Night by Stanley Weintraub, I think it's a fascinating, interesting and very moving effort to learn more about this special night in the midst of war in 1914. Truce and Silent Night, two books about that special Christmas in the midst of World War I. They're available at all of our fine public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.
Nick Schinkel is the director of the West Lafayette Public Library, and he's reviewed Truth, The Day the Soldiers Stopped Fighting by Jim Murphy.